All right. Like the other probability distributions, discrete distributions describe a group of data. Now, typically, discrete distributions is for count data, when I'm counting the number of failures arriving, or I'm counting the number of defects, say, on a door panel. And we have uses for this both in quality type activities and control charts, hypothesis tests, and those kinds of things when I'm dealing with counts or proportions, but also in life data. Sometimes I have nothing more than a pass-fail at the end of a test, and or I have just pass-fail data from field data. You may have what essentially is discrete data, and so discrete distributions allow us to describe and do calculations based on those distributions. Now, there's not quite as many discrete distributions, and when you have the opportunity, use a continuous distribution. Basically, using variables data is an order of magnitude more information, more powerful, I should say, than using discrete data. So if you're designing a test and you have the chance to measure the time to failure versus measuring just whether something has passed or failed, you will use fewer samples to get the same information when you use continuous data. And there are plenty of other examples of that. But there are cases when we really do need to know the discrete distribution, and it's the type of data or the type of question we're dealing with. So let's take a look at some of the distributions that are useful for us. The binomial distribution is basically a collection of Bernoulli trials. And Bernoulli trial is 0-1, pass-fail, on-off, those kinds of results. It's a either-or is the only, you only get two results from each trial. So if, like that running a life test where it either passes or fails, that's a Bernoulli trial for that individual unit. So we call each one of those things a trial. Each time we throw the dice, it's a trial. Now, there may be six sides to that dice, for example, or 20 or 100 or however many there are. And so there's a set of discrete outcomes possible. Now, it doesn't, so each, I should back up. It's not only limited to Bernoulli trials, pass-fail type trials, but there are discrete outcomes. So it could be two, which would be the Bernoulli trial, or it could be more than two, say a 20-sided die, for example. There'd be 20 options available. So N is how many throws of the coin or tosses of the coin or throws of the die or number of units that we're testing, for example, and those would be the number in play or number of chances we're doing. But the other side of the equation, the other parameter is P, the probability of success. So what's the chance of getting a heads? Now, you could easily define success as rolling or flipping a coin and getting a tails. So in that case, P would be defined as the probability of getting a tails. So it's one of the, you got to be careful as you read questions or set up experiments using the binomial distribution is what do you mean by success? And so that P probability is going to be the chance as you define it. And so little housekeeping will keep you clean on that, but it's something to be aware of. And naturally, the chance of getting the other outcome is some other probability. And so if I'm dealing with a binomial distribution, well, let me correct myself here. I was correct. It is each trial has an outcome of pass or fail or Bernoulli outcome. The number of trials can be as many as you want, and they're discrete. So I'll have, say, 10 samples in a test, and they each could either pass or fail, and they're independent from each other. Now, there's a multiple binomial, or multi-binomial, I think it's called, where you can have more than one outcome. It'd be a six-sided dice, for example. Yeah, I think I'm I think I'm getting that correct now, although I'm hesitating because I know that we use binomial. I know what my confusion is. We can use a six-sided die, but what's the chance of getting a 2 or not a 2, which is a Bernoulli trial, or get a 3 or not a 3? It's that's where my confusion was. It depends on how you define the probability of success. So if I'm rolling a six-sided die and I'm only interested in how many times I can roll a 1 out of 5 rolls, the probability is 1 over 6. The P is 1 over 6. The chance of not getting a 1, getting 2, 3, 4, or 5, or 6, is 5 over 6. And that would be the Q is one term for it, or 1 minus P would be the remainder of that probability. So a little bit of notation here, hopefully you're familiar with it, is this N over K in a bracket like this is the combination of K of N taken K times. So we've got, I think that's the way it's phrased, or maybe it's K taken N times or vice versa. I'd have to look it up. I've been talking about distributions a little too long. But basically, we're going to use that combination formula as how many different ways can I take my data and arrange it such that I have K successes and the remainder of my trials then are failures. And then this is the total number of combinations of the data set that I have. So the order of the trials doesn't really matter. It's just going to be if number 1 or number 6 fail, but it doesn't matter that they fail in that order. So combinations is appropriate. And the binomial distribution, the probability density functions, the probability of successes, and let's say I have 5 rolls, K would run from 1 through 5. Right. So if I want to have the probability of rolling a 1 out of 5 tosses of the die, it'd be 1 over 6. And I'd have 5 rolls. But the first roll is K equals 1. The second roll is K equals 2. The third roll is K equals 3, and so on. So very quickly, we're often more interested in the cumulative distribution function, which then allows me to say, well, how many ones will I get out of 5 rolls, for example? And it also allows us to do some using other distributions, which allow us to simplify some of the calculations. Doing it by hand can become pretty tedious. But before I forget, the number of observations is fixed. So when we're setting up an experiment or we're drawing a sample or we're making observations, is N is fixed. We're going to make 10 observations or 100 observations or 73 observations or whatever it is, but it doesn't vary as we go through the analysis. Each observation is independent, so that concept that people get in gambling, if they roll a 7 3 times in a row, there is a finite chance that that would occur, is that they then will say, well, it's not possible to get a 7 on the next one. It's very unlikely. Well, it remains exactly the same probability as the first 3 tosses. It's just completely separated from the previous experience. Now, there is this notion of regression to the mean, but the dice roll over a very long time will tend to go to the mean. And so, but the individual rolls are not influencing the next roll or the roll 10 times from now. So we consider them independent. And the probability of success is also a constant. So as we are rolling dice, it doesn't change the dice such that we get a different set of probabilities for future rolls, as an analogy or an example. But we also, we commonly use the cumulative distribution function, the CDF, because we're interested in, well, how many failure, if we take a sample of 20 units, and we know that we have a probability of, say, 10% defect rate, what's the chance of having 3 defects in our sample of 20? And so the probability P would be my 10%, and K here is 3. So I'm basically calculating the 3 PDF calculations, or 4 of them, 0, 1, 2, and 3. And here I'm doing it in one calculation because it's been tabulated already. Now, this is where the tables come in real handy. If you have the appropriate binomial distribution table for the cumulative distribution, this becomes very straightforward and very quick. If you have to do it by hand, it's running through this formula 4 times in order to get the chance of getting no defects, 1 defect, 2 defects, 3 defects. And that, as you can see, that will take a little bit of time even just to punch it into your calculator. Using Excel or Minitab, it's pretty trivial. But unfortunately, we don't have those tools with us in the exam. Binomial distribution, for me, is probably the second most used in my experience, my work. And it's a very, very popular distribution for all kinds of applications in quality and reliability and in engineering. You're going to see it quite a bit. So I would know the exponential distribution, Weibull distribution, and binomial, and just basically have them memorized and know how to use these formulas very, very quickly, because they're so common. The one last thing on the binomial. Under certain circumstances, you can approximate the binomial using a Poisson distribution or with a normal distribution. And it has some different criteria. So the Poisson is basically if you have a relatively low probability of success, or a very low, relatively low probability, either numbers, samples times probability being less than 10 with large sample size. So it has some caveats, and then Poisson and using the Poisson table may allow you to finish the calculations. On the other hand, you can also use the standard normal under certain conditions. And some books use NP greater than 5 and NP 1 minus P. This 1 minus P in some books is labeled Q, probability of failure, both of these values being greater than 5. And greater than 10 is a little bit more conservative, and I've seen it both ways, depends on your reference. So be aware of that when you're answering a question. I've seen it more often as greater than 5, yet it really is going to depend on which how the question's worded. And greater than 10 is legit also. It's just a bit more conservative. So I mentioned the Poisson distribution. It has a single parameter, a shape parameter of mu. But it also, when we're dealing with failure data, we call it the time domain, and it's using the failure rate times t. So what's the chance for failing per hour? And it has very similar structure in its PDF formula, and the same for its cumulative distribution function. I don't use this one all that often, other than as a way to simplify calculating the binomial, but it does have its own unique characteristics, and I'm drawing a complete blank of where I've ever used it, but it is a listed distribution, and it is pretty common. Now, the hypergeometric is an interesting distribution. It's not that great for life data, but it does allow us to make some interesting calculations, especially, and I have this as a real case. We had a supplier send us 30 samples for some testing that the both parties wanted to do. We had the test facilities to do it, and so they gave us the samples. Now, they've been making millions of these parts, and they claim that their parts were in the part per million defect rate for the issue that we were looking for. And it was something to do with the metallization and how the metals behaved. We wanted to test that. We wanted to gather some data based on that. So we got 30 samples, and 27 of them out of 30 showed this failure mechanism. And so the vendor came out and confirmed that the test was run appropriately and everything was fine. But then they said, well, it was just a random chance that we took a sample and it, by just chance, 27 out of 30 failed, even though it was got about a 5 in a million chance of occurring given their entire population. So given all of their data that they've had, that they've collected, basically because nobody complained, in all of their previous testing, which wasn't near as rigorous, it wasn't run to failure, they were claiming a very, very low failure rate. And we demonstrated that 27 out of 30 had this problem. And so they said, well, that was just chance. And so that's where the hypergeometric comes in, is using this, that we had 27 failures in our test. What was the chance? So if I set that as K, and we had 30 trials, and the population, the total population was, say, 10 million, I think it was, or something like that. And in general, they would have no more than 100 failures out of that 10 million. A very, very low failure rate is what they were suggesting. I think I've got N and K correctly. I might have these two reversed. Depends on your particular notation in your book. But running out this calculation, I found it to be a 1 in 10 to the 68th power probability. And that's, to me, that's not likely to occur in a random sample. So we came to the conclusion that it probably was not just a fluke of random sampling, bad roll of the dice, but rather there was really an issue with this failure mechanism, and thus we chose not to buy those components. So it's a way to compare your test data to claims. What's the chance that this would occur is one way you could use this. There are other applications for the hypergeometric, and it's dealing with discrete data. Here I was using pass-fail data from a test, but it's another handy distribution to have in the toolbox. So I think there's probably another 100 distributions. And there's also distributions that are straight off the histogram. If you can draw and fit a line to your histogram and it fits the criteria that the total area is equal to 1, then you have a distribution. And so if ones that are very, very useful, they get somebody's name attached to it at some point or another if you write that paper. So being able to deal with the four functions and being able to manipulate distributions from one function to another is going to serve you well. But also be aware of the common distributions, Weibull, normal, student T, and the like, binomial, and so on. And such that you understand the formulas and how to manipulate them. Because it's likely that some part of the mathematics you're going to deal with are going to deal with these distributions or interpreting the results or taking a look at graphs and understanding what they mean. So the basic idea is that these are the basic tools that we deal with data in a regular basis. We use those various functions and we use these various distributions to make all kinds of different calculations and conclusions. And the bathtub curve is part of we'll wrap up the probability distribution section talking about the bathtub curve.